ahead, lounge around in bed with a good magazine. We'll even read it to you. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. Live. On Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Good morning, everybody. It's Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Roger Lajoie. Ryan Dixon, Mike Johnson with me. Blue Jays are the story of the town, as they should be. And how about this, folks? For the first time in 22 years, which not coincidentally enough is the last time the Blue Jays made the playoffs, this city is electrified with this Blue Jay team and what they're up to. Mike, was the price right for Mr. Price? I say it was, but boy, oh boy. I still can't believe, guys, David Price is pitching for Toronto on Monday, not for somebody else.
Yeah, no, it's pretty much the biggest upgrade you can get. You know, for you don't give up a roster player. You know, you give up some future, and hey, if everything, you know, falls apart and they don't make the playoffs and David Price doesn't re-sign, yeah, it'll in hindsight look like a failure, but in the short term right now, there's really nothing but positive, you know, feelings to take away from this. And, you know, the Price is Right. I wonder, do we have a limitation on the number of Price is Right?
No, we can use it ad nauseum. Yeah, yeah, until we're sick of it. Yeah.
All right. Well, no, I think it was a fair price for a rental of Dave Price's caliber. I mean, these guys are few and far between, this type of talent, and the fact that the Jays have it, they were the team that ended up getting him. You know, you see the Yankees are probably shaking in their boots right now, even though they've got a lead on them. I've been following this team not super closely, but my entire life, but I can't remember a time in the last, you know, 20 years where, you know, post World Series that this city's been so excited about a roster mid season. You know, there's always optimism heading into a season. They've made big off season moves in the past, but nothing like the past week. It's been pretty phenomenal.
What do you think, Ryan?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it quickly became a case of in for a penny, in for a pound. And the Tulowitzki trade, clearly nobody saw that coming. But I think everyone felt in the aftermath, if you're going to make a move of that magnitude, and based on the fact they hadn't addressed their clear need at that point, you felt like something else was coming down the tube. Did you think they were going to get David Price? Maybe that was a long shot, but yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan. You know, we always talk about, well, you can't judge a trade until, you know, whatever, a month later, 2 years later, whatever, but judge it on the merits of the day it was made. I mean, when Alex Anthopoulos made this trade, I think the absolute worst thing you could say is, good for you. You got the balls to go for it. And I think the best thing you can say is you've really put your team in a position to maybe win the World Series. I mean, you know, the idea of catching the Yankees six games back, we'll see how that goes. But they're right in the wild card mix. Now, I think the key will be, for the Jays, can they get comfortably into that wild card so that if you do get into that one game scenario, you can throw Price out there? Because the idea of the Blue Jays in a one game showdown with and without a David Price at your disposal is night and day. I mean, making the one game playoff and saying, all right, well, R.A. Dickey's been pretty great the last 3 months. You know, let's throw him out there and see what we get versus, let's get our gunslinger out there who has been known to just eviscerate lineups. I mean, you like your odds so much more in that situation. So good on them. They, and you know, again, to follow my original thought of just, you know, why not keep going? Once they got Price, why not go get the other guys? Why not go get Revere? Why not go get a reliever who's going to help sort things out in that bullpen? Because there's no point in going and getting David Price and then saying, well, hopefully these other things will come through. You are committed at that point, and I'm impressed the way Anthopoulos just followed through.
Well, you talk about commitment, and guys, here's the thing. When I'm teaching students, I tell them this. Commitment, your mark on commitment is either 100% or it's zero. There is no such thing as, yeah, I kind of am committed. You either are or you aren't. And I think we're either the Toronto Blue Jays or anybody else. And what you said about Price and getting into the wild card and being the ace of the team applies to every other team in baseball too, though. They're all looking at it as like we get in there and says, who's going to pitch a wild card? Whoever is available, because usually you're sweating just to get into the wild card spot. But back to the point of commitment and being in, whether you're the Blue Jays, the Yankees, Tampa Bay, Oakland, Kansas City, Pitt, doesn't make any difference. What are you trying to do? And everybody says the same thing. Well, we're trying to compete to win a World Series. We got you. Everybody's trying to win, ultimately win a World Series. But are you a buyer? Are you a seller? Are you in for this year or are you not? And yes, you want to do everything. And Alex Anthopoulos is trying to do everything. But here's what he did. He brought in Tulo. He brought in Price. He made the upgrades to the bullpen. He brings in Revere. He makes all these changes, and he still has Stroman, Sanchez, Osuna, Pompey, and a couple of other guys in his system that are still pretty good. So, yes, it's depleted for sure, but here's a guy who's – there's no – and you just said it. What's the point of getting Price enough? What's the point of getting Tulo and stopping? You're in – or you're out. And finally, Toronto's in, guys. The Blue Jays are the talk of baseball. It's not just the fans here talking. The MLB Network is going, holy smokes, what's going on, Toronto? When Chris Archer is tweeting, you want to talk about all in? It's Blue Jays. To me, that is over the top.
And what a rep that is to have with not only guys on your team who are over the moon, but as you reference, there's the maybe the best pitcher or, you know, close to, depending on where you, you know, maybe right behind Price's old teammate. I mean, Archer's a guy who knows what happens when a organization gets that reputation as, hey, this is a team that goes out and gets it done. That makes people want to come here, right?
Well, Archer's not staying in Tampa. Nobody stays in Tampa.
That's right. If there's one thing you know for sure, he's not playing in Tampa for 15 years, so... yeah, not a bad reputation to have, no doubt about it. So yeah, you're right. The waves spread out well beyond the city.
Well, what you said about you're either 100% committed or you're not committed. I think Alex Anthopoulos proved this week his score right now. He would get 100% on that test. What I find interesting about this Jays team is they've sort of lived up to expectations all season. And what I mean by that is in the off season, what were the expectations for this team? They, on paper, perhaps the best lineup in the league. They should lead the league in runs, and they do lead the league in runs. But there was questions about their pitching. And for the most part, that's what's kind of held them back this year. And what I find interesting is after all these moves this week, what are the expectations for this team? It's to make the playoffs, and on paper, their roster, the Jays have a roster that should contend for a World Series. Realistically, that's what they have right now. So it'll be interesting if to see if this team can continue to play up to the expectations. And Anthopoulos, as well, to his credit, when he needed relief, he got some relief. The Jays needed a starter. He got a great starter. I think it's very interesting how this season has kind of flowed for this Jays team. And hopefully for Jays fans, you know, it's going to crescendo into a memorable playoffs and everything.
And not, sorry, I was going to say not to be lost, I think, is the point you made, Raj, about, you know, they still have Marcus Stroman and Aaron Sanchez. They put a real emphasis on acquiring a lot of arms in the system, and this is part of the reason you do that. We know the currency at the trade deadline now is arms. Bats aren't, you know, teams tend to hang on to their bats, but, you know, the arms do move, and to say, even if worst case scenario, you know, go through this run, you don't win the World Series and David Price leaves, you've still got a murderous lineup, Marcus Stroman coming back, perhaps Sanchez ready to step into the rotation. And then who knows what trader Alex can get in the offseason when you go, well, we have Tulowitzki, we have Donaldson. Realistically, we can afford to move another guy. We could, you know, Bautista or Encarnacion, who have team-friendly contracts for a year, you know, maybe you can move one of those guys out and bring in another arm. So even if Price leaves, the team as presently constituted, you know, stands to be really good next year.
They have a fabulous chance at this year, and they have not stopped themselves from being great moving on as well, which I think is incredibly encouraging. And, you know, back to the commitment thing, Pinball Clements has a great line about it. It's like bacon and eggs. The chicken's interested. The pig is committed. It's no half. It's no, yeah, I'll lay a couple eggs. We'll see you guys later. The pig puts it all out there. You have to put it all out there. And in terms of the prospects, yes, you have to continue developing prospects. And you know why? If this organization is going to change its philosophy, so you can trade your prospects to Tampa Bay for Archer when he's a free agent. Mm-hmm. Because prospects are great. And yes, some of them become, and we're going to watch Noah Syndergaard the next 15 years, and people are going to be saying, boy, they really should have kept him. And everybody who says that, I'm going to say, just remember Ricky Romero and Kyle Drabek and a lot of other guys. So you don't know, but you do know about a Price and an Archer. This is Toronto, guys. It's not Tampa Bay.
Exactly. You know, there are different, there are many ways to replenish your franchise in terms of prospects. You know, you can trade away a roster player. There's the draft. There are other ways to develop these long-term projects. And, you know, they gave up a lot of left-handed pitchers, but there are a lot of left-handed pitchers that are yet to be drafted. There are a lot of left-handed pitchers in other organizations that the Jays can go acquire in the offseason. For the short term, for what their goal is right now, the Jays did what they had to do.
Now, here's an interesting element of it. It's Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Roger Lajoie. Ryan Dixon, Mike Johnson with me. How Alex went about doing this, once again, the ninja surprised us. He's going to go out. We had Jeff Hoffman, a prospect, loaded with talent. Really, really, you know, guys were interested in him. Alex has to go out and go get pitching. He doesn't go out and get pitching. He gets Tulo. He makes that deal first. In the same way in the offseason, everybody said, oh, he's got to address pitching. He's got to get address left field. There might be a hole at second base. And he gets Donaldson and Martin, third baseman. Okay, does the same kind of thing, the same modus operandi here, surprising us. But, guys, if he'd only brought Tulo in, look at this lineup now. How do you feel about that deal, never mind the fact they got Price?
They had to get pitching right now. I mean, the deal to get Tulowitzki, I think, was great. He's a clear upgrade on Jose Reyes. The opportunity to get even a little better defensively there at shortstop, I think, was big. And, you know, Tulowitzki's had some injury problems, we know, but, you know, he's under contract for a long time. I mean, this is a guy, essentially it comes down to if you can get better, if you can go out and get a guy who is widely regarded as one of the best at his position, why not do it? So I think just, evaluating it on a standalone basis, it was a good deal. But I will tell you, if we were sitting here today and that was the only thing he didn't go out and get a pitcher, even if it was someone not of Price's caliber, they had to, I think. It was,
oh, agreed. No, doubt. You had to, they already had the offense. There's no question. I love the player. I think he's an MVP. He's played in the World Series. He's a great player. 4 years of control. There's so much to like. But that's what I mean by going all in or all out.
Sure.
Why just go halfway? Well, and my biggest concern was that this team's offense was going to get wasted. Like, this is run scoring at almost a record pace. And if they they may still not make the playoffs. But if they had not even made a run at it or whatever, and you score 1,000 runs in a season, how bad does that feel?
It was begging for it. They were begging for an upgrade to, basically, for lack of a better way of putting it, do the offense the courtesy of giving it a chance, you know? There was such a wide discrepancy between what they were getting at the plate and what they were getting on the hill. And you knew if it got even just a little better on the mound that they had a chance, and now with a dramatic upgrade, now you we always hear coaches talk about, or managers talk about, you know, putting players in a position to succeed, giving them a chance, essentially. And I think now what you've done is you've given that offense a chance, because it'll be able to carry you a long way if you just give it a bit of support.
The Tulowitzki deal is great for two reasons beyond the fact he's a great player. To me, it shows that Anthopoulos, he didn't just make moves, with the mindset, my job's on the line, we have to do it all in, let's just get a bunch of rental players, give up all our future and all in right now. Because the Tulowitzki, he's under contract for a few years. So it shows that Anthopoulos is still thinking long term. He's not you know, completely focused only on this season. He does have other things in mind. And this is the type of deal that hypothetically could have been done in the offseason, right? Like, he's under contract, Reyes under contract. It's a deal that could have been consummated.
They were almost going to do it last season, according to Alex, last winter.
Exactly. But, and then the fact that he does it mid-season also shows that if he, like Ryan, you just said, if you can upgrade now, why not? If you're all in, you're all in. Like, you could do this type of deal in the offseason, but when you're also going to, you're planning on acquiring guys like Price and relief in the bullpen, why not do it now and really, really show that your division rivals that you're serious, you're not messing around, we're not just, here to have a good time. We're a team that the rest of the league's talking about for a reason.
Good managers, good coaches, guys, in my mind, do a lot of things. But one of the things they do is eliminate excuses. And if I'm a Blue Jay and I'm sitting there and I'm going, so, boys, like, what do we need to make the playoffs? Well, pitching staff isn't good enough. And we all know what everybody in baseball knew what the Jays' weakness was. They needed a starter. They needed more bullpen help, a little bit more depth. Okay. And now this is 100. No one is going to be criticizing Alex Anthopoulos for the last 2 months of the regular season. They missed the playoffs. Nature of the way people are, they can criticize then. Right now, it's all on the players. Everything you want, it's almost like, you know, what do you need to win? We need an improved sauna in the dressing room. There's a sauna. What else do you need? Hockey players. Oh, my stick's not good. Here's the best sticks. You just keep there. I've given you all the tools. And I look at this lineup and I see it, guys, from top to bottom. And then you put in Price and the improved bullpen. I don't want to say I don't see how they can lose, but I don't see how they cannot at least, what's a cliche we use for years? Meaningful baseball in September. We're going to have meaningful baseball in September, no matter what.
Well, and that invigorates the fans and all that stuff you were talking about invigorates the players. There's clearly a great vibe coming out of the clubhouse now. And I mean, you think back to a year ago with, you know, Bautista a little sullen after the deadline, nothing happened. I mean, that is a distant memory now. And do excited players translate into wins? Maybe not necessarily, but man, it's got to help a little bit. You know, everyone's coming into that clubhouse with a bit of a bounce in their step now. And that work environment is about as good as it can be. And everyone listening can probably knows the difference between a good work environment and a bad work environment and the toll that can take on you mentally. So yeah, I think it really does light a fire under all the players. And even if that's only good for, you know, whatever, 2% more from each guy, then whatever, you'll take it. I think that's...
Difference making the playoffs, not making the playoffs is sometimes 1%,
sure,
never
exactly.
Mind 2%.
That's right. So I don't think you can underestimate or completely dismiss the effect that these moves have on the team just from an emotional standpoint, just from everyone saying, this is great. I'm so in on this. And again, it goes back to, you know, we're maybe getting ahead of ourselves, but acquiring a reputation as an organization that does things like this, that can go to free agents and say, did you see what we did last August? You want to be part of that or not?
Well, you even look to last night's game. Maybe the moves that they made gave the Jays individual players just a fraction more energy last night. Last night they get down early and then they're down 6-3 late in the game against a team with a great bullpen. And you never really got the sense that they were completely out of a game. And
I have the sense they're coming back.
Exactly.
Never mind that they're not out of the game. I have the sense they're coming back. I'm the official scorer last night. I'm not putting the winning and losing pitcher down on the card yet to announce after the game, because this game, they're coming back. And that's even another step of they're always in a game. It's not anymore they're always in a game. You expect them to win.
Yeah. Yeah, three runs down with a few innings left is nothing for this lineup. And you could kind of feel that just watching the game last night. The fans there weren't, you know, pensive and, uh-oh, we just made all these moves, but we're going to lose the first game, you know, after the deadline. No, there's a real confidence to this team right now on the field and off the field. Absolutely.
Sportsnet Magazine Live, I'm Roger LaJoie in for Ben Ennis this week. Ryan Dixon, Mike Johnson with me. The Red Hot Blue Jays coming up again, of course, with the pregame show 12:30 with Mike Wilner, first pitch 107. Mark Burley and David Price back-to-back on the mound for the Blue Jays. They've already won two straight over the defending American League champions. That's what we're talking about here. You guys talked about the small semantics, the differences. One of my favorites as a stats guy is this. You know what the difference is between a 280 hitter and a 300 hitter? 10 hits a year over 162 games. What difference does a little upgrade make? What does a little thing, what does that mean? 10 hits. Think about it. A 280 hitter is 140 for 500 at-bats, and a 300 hitter is 150 for 300 at-bats. What difference does 10 hits make over the course of a season? A lot, especially if you get them. So they add Mark Lowe. They pick up some help, outfield help from the Phillies. Again, we talked about all in. Well, now you've got Tulo. No, that wasn't enough. Oh, you got Price. That wasn't enough. Again, going back to eliminating those excuses, guys, now you've added depth. So all the holes this team had, starting pitching, bullpen. Let's not forget LaTroy Hawkins came in that deal too. Starting pitching, bullpen, depth. Tick, tick, tick.
Yeah, well, you look at a guy like Ben Revere, and you talk about these little plays over the course of a season that end up making a huge difference on paper and in individual games. And a guy like Revere, who can steal bases with the best of them, late in the season and into the playoffs, you see this, you know, every year, a pinch runner at the right time gets to second. It opens things up for the batter. These little things, the Jays have set themselves up very well, you know, to depending on the situations they get late in games, late in the season, and hopefully for Jays fans in the playoffs. Guys like Ben Revere, he's totally overshadowed with all the other moves they've made, but him stealing one base at the right time in the right game in the right inning could be the difference between the Jays winning a wild card game or getting to the next round. It's these little things like that. You know, Anthopoulos covered all his bases, you know, pun sort of intended, but it wasn't just a starter, it wasn't just a reliever. He added depth on the field, he improved shortstop. I mean, it's a really great week, and the fact that they went out last night, a group totally energized. They're in it. There's this aura around this team right now. Hopefully they can continue that the rest of the regular season.
And, you know, I think it'll just be fun too. You mentioned the cliche meaningful baseball in September. I mean, my God, this city's been crying out for that. I mean, even going back to last year when it looked like a lock that they were going to be playing big games in September, you know, it more or less didn't happen the way things came apart. And, you know, it's been so long. And just, even as someone who's down at the ballpark a bit, you know, they're, even when the attendance isn't great, you can still feel the vibe. Like, it always struck me that there's a real core, and actually a fairly young core. I mean, a lot of people who would have been born after the World Series wins, you know, still trotting up there with the Blue Jays shirts on. And, you know, something like this, it just ignites so much excitement around a team. And I mean, that's one of the most fun things about sports, is just being in on when something like that is going down. So assuming things play out the way they're trending, it should be a pretty fun September to be around the Rogers Center, that's for sure.
And guys, on top of everything, about 20, 25 minutes ago, guess who the Blue Jays recalled?
I saw that.
Kawasaki.
Mr. Kawasaki. That's the cherry on top right there.
Team mascot is back. Yeah. Kawasaki and Revere have been brought up with the Blue Jays, activated in the case of Revere. Valencia and Carrera designated for assignment. Those are the moves made with this roster. Now they have to do this. We should say a fast word about Jose Arraez, because of all the core and everything that moved along, he was really the only guy. And I think you talked about the mood and how everybody was feeling. The change in the clubhouse from the day after the Tulo deal, as great a player as he was, there was a real sense of sadness because they lost a guy who was popular, whose work ethic was over the top. Yes, defensively, the skills were diminishing. There's no question. It's a big contract. The deal is great. I think everyone does that. There was a real sadness there. The next day, Tulo comes. He's the hero. It's not forgotten, but everyone starts. So it's all about winning. But Jose Reyes was a pretty good soldier for this team for the time he was here. That's for sure.
Yeah, no, by all indications, he was great in the locker room. He's just, he's a guy who's, he's always smiling, you know. He can be hurt, he can be not playing 100%, he's always smiling, and as a fan, you want to see that, you know. These guys get to play baseball for a living, and he seems to love that, and his teammates loved him. But you're totally right, the other deals certainly, you know, soften the blow of, okay, they lost a fan favorite, but they're in a better position right now.
He's got to be the most depressed guy in baseball right now. Eh? Like, yeah. He must have, after hearing the price news, he must have been like,
oh, man.
Yeah. Are you kidding? Now I'm in Colorado. I got to finish out here after I was with the, I came from the Marlins and the, what the deal is. When do I get a chance to win here for sure? Will be fascinating to see what transpires. It's Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Roger Lajoie, Ryan Dixon, Mike Johnson with me. Coming up, so the Blue Jays, great moves. Everybody's thrilled. It's exciting. Tulo, Donaldson, Martin, Bautista, Edwin. But moving forward, what does this mean for Bautista and Edwin? After this year, regardless of how well they do, what's the new core of the Blue Jays? We'll talk about that next on Sportsnet Magazine Live on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
The playoff landscape looks a whole lot different this season. After years of losing, teams like the Chicago Cubs and Houston Astros are challenging established contenders like the Cardinals and Angels.
A high, deep drive, left center. Is this the one? You bet it is. That is a three-run homer. The first of Chris Bryant's career.
It's definitely not the last time the Cubs will get a boost from a core of impact young players. After years focused on accumulating as much talent as possible, they're finally seeing results in Chicago. Our midseason MLB report covers the teams to watch down the stretch. We break down what it's like to face Max Scherzer, why Albert Pujols is an elite slugger again, how the Royals keep runs off the board, and where Alex Rodriguez can take the Yankees. For many teams, it's a time of hope.
1-0 pitch, driven out into right center, Span going after it. He can't get it! Cubs win! Cubs win! Cubs win! Addison Russell drives in Herrera!
Maybe baseball's lovable losers aren't so bad anymore.
I'm Roger Lajoie for Ben Ennis this Saturday morning. Ryan Dixon, Mike Johnson with me. We are broadcasting live in Toronto, home of the Blue Jays. We want it. We just go out and buy it. Just go get it. Just like back in the day. Talking about price, no problem. Or reality sets in. Boys, the core starts. Now, the core is great. Tulo, Donaldson, Martin, Bautista, Edwin. If it's not possible to keep them all and you want to re-sign Price, the name, obviously, is Bautista, who has served this club with incredible distinction. He is so much like Carlos Delgado. Delgado, for years, was one of the best players, best hitters in baseball that nobody knew about and never did anything around him. Doc Halliday, same thing, pitcher who came here and was not surrounded with enough. Now, Bautista is surrounded with enough. Are you prepared to let him go? That would be, I don't know if it's heartbreaking for Bautista, but it would be heartbreaking for a lot of Blue Jay fans. He's been a big piece of this puzzle. Is he in the core moving forward?
That's, you know, that's the question. I think one of the first things that popped into my mind when they acquired Tulowitzki is the fact that they kind of have, they don't have to rely so much on Bautista and Encarnacion anymore. They've got Tulo and Russell Martin and Donaldson, and that's kind of your new core. And, you know, Bautista, he's having a great season. He's still putting up great numbers, and, you know, hopefully for his sake, he can do that for another, you know, several years. But he is getting older, and the Jays have a lot of work to do long term. They gave up what was it, 9 left-handed pitchers in their system. They're gonna, something like that, with all the moves they made. They're going to have to replenish their depth, their organizational depth somehow. And a quick way to do that, you know, potentially, is you give up a bit of offense, whether it is Encarnacion or Bautista. You could send one of those players to another team and get a whole lot of prospects in return. A lot of pitching. Maybe, you know, if Price doesn't come back, there's a good chance he won't come back. Maybe you go and you get another good starter for him, or you come into next season with him and you see how the season plays out and you get to the deadline, and maybe he becomes a rental player if the Jays aren't in it next season. It's something that, you know, if he, from a fan's point of view, you'd love for him to, you know, just ride out the rest of his career and have great success here in Toronto. But it has to be an option for Alex Anthopoulos to, you know, you just let Reyes go. He was a fan favorite. He was popular in the clubhouse, but you did what you had to do to improve the team. And if looking to trade Bautista to really restock your pitching prospects, it's got to be at least, you know, within the realm of possibility. It's got to be something Anthopoulos is willing to consider.
Ryan, he's going to need a ton of money. Somebody may have to go here. Is it him? Is it Edwin? Or
yeah, they're clearly the two best candidates. And, you know, I think there's something to be said for the old adage of trading a guy a year too early instead of too late. You know, if you expand that out to, you, as painful as it is to get rid of someone when they can still produce, you know, you don't want to let emotion drive the day, right? And I don't think Anthopoulos is in danger of doing that. But when you're talking about, especially Bautista, but really Encarnacion as well, you're talking about fan favorites. Great success stories for the Jays too, right? I mean, guys they found off the scrap heap who came in here and produced the way they have. But you've got to deal from your position of strength. And this team's clear position of strength is offense. And when you consider you could package one of those guys to bring back something that is going to help your rotation. I mean, you have to believe no matter how things shake out next year, Toronto's going to, its opening day roster is going to be able to score runs with or without Bautista, with or without Encarnacion. The question, again, will probably be what's happening on the other side of the ball. And it's one of those things that just might end up making too much sense not to do. I mean, if you can draw up the lineup without one of those guys and go, we love it, then why not float it out there and see what you can get? Because they're on team-friendly deals for one more year. There's, you know you're going to find a lineup of takers because there's always going to be teams looking for that kind of bat. And as Mikey said, it could be a way to replenish some of what you've lost. Or it could be a way to go out and get one of the top, if like a Cole Hamels who did get traded. But, you know, every year there seems to be a guy like Cole Hamels out there who isn't a free agent, but who could be on the move. If that will help you get that guy into your rotation, again, it might just make too much sense not to.
Well, every season is a new season, and that's a great point. And this is another thing to keep in mind, too, because we have not seen this, you know, or really thought about this too much because they've been out of sight, out of mind. Moving forward into next year, Stroman and Sanchez are both in the starting rotation. And that, we have not seen Stroman all year. We have Sanchez has been in and out, and now he's back in the bullpen. So we talk about whether Price comes back. I think they should do everything they can to re-sign David Price. I would throw all in on Price and take my chances at some of the other positions, even if it meant Bautista or Edwin going. But Stroman and Sanchez are going to be in the starting rotation of this team. Two young studs. So all of a sudden, you've got that young element of it without having to depend on the veterans. And I like what you said, Ryan, in terms of trading somebody a year early as opposed to waiting too long. You're right. Bautista and Edwin have been soldiers, fantastic hitters, among the two best. The reason I say Bautista over Edwin, Edwin's basically, let's face it, he's a DH. And he's a DH most of the time. And he plays first base, but he's looked at and considered a DH. Bautista is still considered, if the shoulder stays healthy, fabulous arm. He's the all-round, total package, MVP kind of candidate. The booty you can get back for him is incredible. In a perfect world, you act like the Red Sox or the Yankees sign. I think ultimately we're going to have to see, and we will find out, is the ownership prepared to spend $126 million, $129, whatever they're spending now, and went up because of Price, but let's just say ballpark. Are they willing to spend $130 or $160? I know it's not our money. $30 million is a big difference, but that is astronomical in terms of how you can approach this team. Because I think keeping Bautista and Edwin, even though they're 35, is possible if the checkbook is out because you still have the young talent. Like Stroman, Sanchez, Osuna. They've just started their career. So, boy, it's a tough call, though.
And, you know, it's also really tough to speculate about this when the team's playing well. Because when the team's playing well, Batista's a part of that. When the team's struggling, Batista's been a guy, you know, the past couple seasons that he will speak his mind. Last year when they didn't make big moves, he was critical of management. And, you know, when the team's losing, you know, even when Reyes was traded, you know, his Batista's comments that he was kind of disappointed, they were a little misconstrued. But the fact that that became a pretty big story, those types of stories sometimes seem to follow Batista. So when I liken Batista in a way sort of to Phil Kessel in the sense that he's a superb talent. But when things aren't going well, there, you know, all the focus is on him. And it seems that, you know, he seems to get kind of shrouded in this negativity. And it would be easier to trade a guy like Batista if the Jays start to struggle. But when the Jays are going like they are right now, and like for hopefully for Jays fans, they do for the rest of regular season, it's tough to trade away, you know, a centerpiece like that.
Well, that we're even having the discussion, I'm sure some fans shake their head and go, what are they talking about dealing Batista for?
Yeah.
Okay, they're right in the crunch of things. But that's where the forward thinking of a manager has to come to fruition. At Sportsnet Magazine Live, Roger Lajoie for Ben Ennis, Ryan Dixon, Mike Johnson with me. We haven't even gotten into Alex Anthopoulos yet. And Alex Anthopoulos, of course, has been the lightning rod. But let's look at the facts here. And they are facts. You can give opinions on things. The Blue Jays have not made the playoffs. And that's Alex's mantra and his job and his position. But Reyes, Burley, Dickey, Cabrera, Tulo, Donaldson, Martin. The guy has brought in all world players. It is not Price now. It has not come in to fruition yet. Ultimately, the wins and losses. But like Bautista, like Edwin, guys, he needs a contract too. Have you seen enough now to make a decision? Or do you let that go to the offseason? And there's speculation as to who the president and who's going to run this ball club. It all starts at the top, right? So what do you do with Alex Anthopoulos?
It's gonna come down to how the rest of the season plays out. I think it's as simple as that. If they and also this year, you can't blame it if a couple guys go down. They've stocked the lineup so much that you can't blame it on injuries. Even if they run into a bit of bad luck, they're all in and they have to make the playoffs this year. Otherwise, you have to have the hard discussion of, is Alex the right guy? He's made all these big moves. They haven't paid off, you know, if they miss the playoffs this year. And you have to at least have that discussion. It's tough because he's done everything fans have wanted him to do. You know, he's made more big deals than any other GM in the league over the past few seasons. He, you know, he acts like he's playing a video game sometimes. Some of all the talent he's brought in, like, these aren't guys that are easily, you know, attainable all the time. And he's done it on numerous occasions. You have to give him full credit for that. They needed a starter. They got a great starter. They needed some depth. They had a guy like Josh Donaldson, the best at his position. Tulo, one of the best at his. Alex Anthopoulos has done everything, and now it really is up to, you know, to Gibby to manage the guys correctly and the guys to do what they're capable of. If that happens, there's no reason why you wouldn't give him an extension.
Yeah, you look at the body of work independent of the results, and you'd say, extend this guy for 5 years or what have you. As Mike said, the trades in the past couple of years have just been incredible. And the organization is set up to succeed for a while. So just looking at it through that lens, you'd think it's a no-brainer. But you're right. What happens if, after all this, he still has zero playoff appearances on his resume, which is a distinct possibility? I guess I'm of the mind that I just think he's been doing good work, and he seems to have a real feel for, you know, I like the diversity and the way that he's open to anything, i.e., you know, no one thought they needed a catcher, but he went out and got Russell Martin to improve that position. He was available, he got him, and said, okay, we'll deal with the ramifications later. They didn't think they needed an upgrade, certainly offensively at shortstop, but when one became available, one of the guys who did represent an upgrade because he was the best at the position, he found a way to get him and said, okay, we'll deal with it, we'll move other things around. And I just think he's a guy who has He has a creative approach. He's able to keep multiple things going at once in terms of the team being strong now, but still with an eye to the future. So I don't know. I think he might be someone you want to keep in the fold for a while.
Well, I would take the May, and I'll put a caveat on my opinion on this, guys. Obviously, there's talk they're going to bring in a new president next year. Paul Beeston is leaving. So the president, you know, ultimately is the guy running the baseball operations. But all that said, and I do understand it's all about results, I would give Alex Anthopoulos a 5-year contract extension today. I would not wait to the playoffs. I don't need to see the playoffs. If it's all about the process and your confidence in them. So they go, they have the run, and they miss by one game. Or they go into the play-in game, and they had to use Price the game before the play-in game, and they lose the play-in game, and you make the decision on what you think of Alex Anthopoulos based on that. No, I don't. I would sign him to a 5-year contract this morning.
And I don't think any fans would be upset with that. I think, you know, if it, let's say they did that this morning, fans would be like, all right.
Yeah.
Great.
This is clearly the time for him to ask for that deal. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. And you know, okay, from the fans' perspective, all right, what big moves, you know, can he do in the offseason coming up?
You know? What do you want from your manager? A sense of confidence that he's the guy. I have seen enough of his body of work here, despite the fact they have not made the playoffs, and I know that's the deal. I will give him a 5-year contract extension. I have faith in his ability to do that. Yeah. I do. And Masai Ujiri has not won a playoff series running the Raptors, and I'd do the same thing for him. And Mike Babcock has done nothing in Toronto either, but gets an 8-year deal because they have confidence in him. We'll see what they do. I would do it. I don't expect they're going to do it. I don't know what's going to happen in the front office, and we'll see who the new president is going to be. There's Bob McCowan floated out Billy Beane's name. Are you kidding me? Like, I mean, holy smokes. So
you must really regret the Donaldson trade.
Maybe that's why. Maybe Dombrowski also is in the mix, and he got him Price. Maybe that's part of the strategy here, right? Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Roger Lajoie for Ben Ennis, Ryan Dixon, Mike Johnson with me. Coming up, what about the rest of baseball, and in particular, the rest of the division? The Yankees were uncharacteristically very quiet at the trade deadline. Are the Jays better than the Yankees now to make up that 6-game deficit? We'll talk about that and the rest of baseball next. It's Sportsnet Magazine Live on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Roger Lajoie, and for Ben Ennis this week, Ryan Dixon, Mike Johnson alongside. We got Blue Jay baseball coming up because we're your home for the noon improved Blue Jays. Yeah, no kidding, eh? First pitch, 107, pregame 12:30 with Mike Wilner from the Rogers Center. I will join you live from the Rogers Center tomorrow morning. We're going to be there right up a couple hours before the ballgame. I'll do about 10 to 12. Mike will have his pregame show live from the Rogers Center because the Blue Jays are the talk of the town with good reason for sure, with all the moves being made. And what excitement. David Price pitching on Monday. And, man, for the Blue Jays, by the way, in case you haven't heard. Now, the rest of baseball, boys, looking in with a lot of envy at Toronto, and you read other sites and you check out other teams. And we mentioned Chris Archer earlier tweeting, a guy, an opposing pitcher on a division opponent, saying you want to talk about all in. The Blue Jays are all in, so they're all in. But the rest of baseball was, there was a lot of activity. There were winners and losers. Before we get to the general winners and losers of all of baseball, let's stay in-house in the American League East. The New York Yankees, I tweeted yesterday, the Yankees are acting like the Blue Jays used to act, and the Blue Jays are acting like the Yankees used to act, i.e., making the blockbuster, taking on salary, doing it. The Yankees are the team they're chasing for a division title 6 games back. You guys confident the Blue Jays can make up that gap, given the fact that, really, the Yankees didn't do much of anything?
Well, it seems like the last couple of days, even though they're 6 games back, this is almost like the Blue Jays division to lose. Like they've become the favorite in this division. And Roger, you said off air earlier that the Yankees are sort of a victim of their own success. You know, they have a cushion in their division. Maybe they didn't feel the pressure to make a big move to put them over the top heading into the playoffs. And then, you know, they must be kicking themselves right now, because you look, if they're, from a Yankees perspective, they look at what the Jays just did. And maybe they didn't think in a million years the Jays would get Price. But, you know, when that happened, Price historically has done very well against the Yankees. And the Jays play the Yankees, what, 12 or 13 more times this year? And Price will be scheduled to start about three more times against the Yankees. And those games, you know, the remaining series against Jays versus Yankees, you know, could end up deciding who wins the division. So if you're the Yankees right now, and you're a Yankees fan, and you just sit back and your team did nothing, and then you look at a division rival like Toronto, who did everything possible to improve their team, I think you might be a little nervous, even though you have a nice cushion on the rest of your division right now.
Yeah, six games is, I mean, let's just not dismiss that. You know, pretty good. They built themselves a nice buffer. It's an un-Yankee-like team from top to bottom this year. I mean, we're used to them being the, you know, the evil empire, the bullies who just go, you know, whatever, sign the biggest free agents in their prime. And they're really, you know, starting with, in some ways, the symbol of what they've been doing this year, Alex Rodriguez. There are a bunch of comeback stories, and I don't know if you want to say patchwork, but it's actually kind of a likable Yankee team the way they put things together. Yeah, I mean, when I look at that staff, when I look at that lineup, it's certainly not insurmountable. You know, who knows exactly what they were or weren't in on yesterday, but you're right. It does feel like we're living a bit in a parallel universe where the Jays are going out and snatching the top, you know, hired gun on the market, and the Yankees are just kind of sitting back, looking at their hands, saying, you know, check and see what comes.
Well, you're right about six games is not, but if I would suggest if the New York Yankees had a one game lead, or if the Yankees were two back of the division, they would have found a way to get Craig Kimbrell, or would have done any of the people. They were a couple of Padre pitchers were available. I know they really like Luis Severino. They're calling him up to join the rotation. I know that Teixeira has been incredible. A-Rod is comeback player of the year, although nobody will vote for him. Ellsbury is hanging in there. He's gotten healthy again. I just see them as too old and too frail, though, guys, for 162. And yeah, maybe they hang on and win, but boy, to me, it's shaky. And I really will stand by the fact they had a six-game lead, changed their philosophy, and I think that's a mistake. I think when you're up by six, it's you can't fall in love with the positioning with 60 games to go in the season, including 13 against the Blue Jays. So we'll see. I'm not dismissing them. They are the Yankees after all. I just don't shake in fear with them as I have in the past. And I think another element, guys, too, is when we look at it, and people know this, but you don't really think about it or talk about it enough. Just think, in the last 2 years since they expanded the playoffs with the second wild card, what it means to be a wild card now.
It's huge.
A wild card is now a crapshoot. It used to be the wild card. You'd be, oh, well, you'll play one of the division teams. You'll be one of the four teams in the playoffs. You get an automatic berth into a playoff series. In fact, 1 year, if you guys recall, the Yankees and the Red Sox tied for first in the American League East, and they didn't even bother to play a playoff game because both teams were going to the playoffs. So I believe they declared the Yankees the division champ. Nobody even cared because, well, it's the playoffs, the four teams. All right, we get a banner, but who cares? Now, by the way, if anybody ties for the American League East, there will be a playoff, even if both teams are in there. That's how significant now it is to win the division title. So I heard some people saying, well, the Yankees are six up, but they're eight up on a wild card position. The wild card position is a crapshoot. Mm-hmm. You got to win the division and go for it. And I think they will regret not bolstering up. And the psychological impact of now facing Price and Tulo, which they didn't have to worry about 3 days ago, I don't know. There's no guarantees, guys, but I just don't think they did enough. And the rest of the division, in my mind, Baltimore, did nothing. Well, Tampa Bay never does anything, and I don't dismiss them because they have such great young pitching and they're well managed, but I'm not shaken about them either.
Well, if you compare the Yankees to a team like the Royals, like the Royals also have a big cushion on their division, but they went out and made a couple big additions. You know, they did what the Yankees didn't do. Okay, we've got a nice lead in our division. You know, it's pretty much a given unless we totally fall apart. We're going to win the division and be back in the playoffs. But they go out and they get, you know, Zobrist and Cueto, and they make improvements to an already solid roster. It when you compare it to, you know, another AL team like the Yankees, it's like, man, the Yankees didn't do anything. And they're just relying on kind of staying hot. And they're relying on guys like Teixeira to keep it up and keep hitting home runs. And you know, one injury, you know, they've got a couple banged up pitchers, don't they, the Yankees? You know, it could fall apart quickly for the Yankees.
Yeah, CeCe Sabathia is not banged up. He's just no good anymore. He can't get anybody out. He's awful. He has just been terrible this year. And that's the so-called ace of the staff. So we'll see. Like, I like Price a lot better than Sabathia in a match of number ones, although the Yankees will argue now it's somebody else besides Sabathia supplanted him as a number one. But I would agree with that. I wonder, guys, too, you know, because we talk about trends, eh? You see it in sports and all the time is like when something happens, you know, for instance, it seems like every manager that's hired has experience. And then it's like, no, they're going for the younger guys. Trends seem to come. Maybe last year, Oakland and Detroit just, and especially Oakland, bombing out with all the moves they made. Now a general manager says, well, you know what? If I can play it a little tighter, because sometimes the marketplace is, because what can Brian Cashman's got an easy answer. If anybody says, why didn't you do anything in the New York Press? Oakland and Detroit went all in last year. Look what happened to them. And that, to me, is the thing. You're right about Kansas City. We talk about the rest of the teams here. Terrific job. Johnny Cueto, Zobrist, fantastic. Minnesota Twins, not doing very much. White Sox. But the Tigers finally unloading. I give them credit for that because I'm sure they did not want to.
No, and, you know, and that's, and, you know, another example of a team, you know, kind of planning for the future. You know, if they realized that Price wasn't going to come back, get something for him. You know, get something for him. And it's not out of the realm of possibility that they sneak into the playoffs. I doubt it happens, but they're still in that lump of teams that, you know, they have an outside shot at a wild card spot. So, yeah, you know, you're going to lose guys anyways. Get something for him. Norris is a really good prospect. I believe he might even be starting for them tomorrow. You know, so I have a buddy who's a Tigers fan, and, you know, although it's kind of the moves that they made indicate that they're not going to go for it this year, he's not upset with the things they've done because, you know, they position themselves well, in, you know, for the next few years.
I think they're a bit of an interesting case relative to what we were talking about commitment. I mean, can they retool and come back next year? Sure. You know, they still have some pretty good, I mean, who knows, maybe Daniel Norris will be a strong contributor to their staff next year. You know, Miguel Cabrera is still the best hitter in baseball, but I wonder if Detroit is going to get into that zone where you do start talking about in or out, because, you know, to some degree, when we're talking about the Blue Jays, we're saying, well, if you're going to go get Price, then you might as well go get Revere and you might as well get Lowe. I kind of look at the Tigers and say, okay, well, if you're going to trade Price, I mean, I know he's probably going to walk at the end of the year, but if you're going to trade Price, you're going to trade Cespedes, rip it down. I mean, go for it. Get rid of all, whoever you can.
Start again, maybe.
Yeah, start again, because you've had this 10-year run with this team, and it hasn't happened. You know, they went to the World Series in 06. It's now 2015. They haven't got there. Don't turn into the, you know, the biggest warning case out there, the Philadelphia Phillies. You don't want to slide into that territory. So again, get ahead of things and really, really, really make a strong reboot. And so we'll see going into the winter if they have that approach or if they're saying we're going to take one step back and try and take two step forwards. We know with Mike Ilitch there, you know, I believe he's 86, desperately wants to win a World Series, has committed so much already. And it hasn't happened. So, you know, we'll see, because he's not working with a long timeline. But, yeah, I think they'll be a fascinating team to watch going forward.
Ryan Dixon, Mike Johnson with me. I'm Roger Lajoie, Sportsnet Magazine, live as we continue to look around the majors and the other teams that were active. Nobody was more active than Toronto with the deadline, for sure. Here's the frustrating thing for Blue Jay fans in this marketplace, guys, and we've talked about, never mind the fact that they haven't been in the playoffs in 22 years and the fact that they're the only North American sports franchise that hasn't had at least one playoff game in 22 years, which is downright embarrassing. But the fact is, teams like Kansas City and Pittsburgh, who were perennially crappy, are now look to be perennial playoff teams. Pirates, probably count them as a perennial playoff team now. They're really improved, and the Royals we already talked about. And the Houston Astros, here is a team that if the Blue Jays had done nothing at the trade deadline, people would be pointing at, how the heck did they do it? But guys, I don't know how they've done it, but bringing in Gomez at the trade deadline, I got to like what they've done, especially, Mike, and you look at this club too, they still got prospects and everything. All in or all out, they seem to have been able to do both.
Yeah, and you know, it's them and the Royals definitely, I think, would be the two favorites maybe in the AL. You know, they're I know Ben Nicholson-Smith is big on what the Astros did, and it's kind of hard not to, you know, and very much like the Royals, they're a team that they have a lead in their division, they're positioned well for the playoffs, but they go and make a couple moves in an effort to put themselves over the top. And, you know, Toronto, Kansas City, and Houston really set themselves apart in the last week or so with the moves they made.
And it's fun to see those teams come back the way, you know, Houston has undergone this huge rebuilding process. As you mentioned, Raj, I mean, Kansas City and Pittsburgh, I mean, they were the towns that winning forgot there for so long. And to see those fan bases reinvigorated and come out and support the team the way they have. I mean, Kansas City, my God, that place was insane last year.
The playoffs last year were incredible.
And this is what happens when you get 90 feet from tying the World Series in Game 7. You go get Johnny Cueto, and they deserve kudos for that because that's obviously not in line with the Kansas City approach. But it's great. It's fun. I mean, I guess just casting back 5-10 years. I mean, I know there's an argument to be made for the dynasties, but myself, I love seeing these teams rise up, Houston, Kansas City, Pittsburgh, and threaten to win the division. I think it's fun. I like mixing it up, and the New Yorks and Bostons, and I guess you could even say the Tigers of the world, they're always going to be in the mix. They won't be gone for too long. So it's great to see these teams get up and have a real crack at it.
Now, another team, and there's a couple of teams I think I would put in the interesting bracket. One of them is the Texas Rangers, because you look at their record, you don't think they would be a team that would be trying to pick up Cole Hamels and, you know, kind of go all in. And they're not going all in, but it is kind of difficult to try to figure out what it is they're doing. Now, one thing about Hamels is they made it clear, whether they make the playoffs this year or not, their rotation next year is Darvish, Hamels, Holland. That looks pretty darn nasty. The Rangers are one of those teams. And then the flip side of the Rangers is probably the Mariners, who were considered to be, hey, that's going to be a great team this year. And for whatever reason, they have just not been able to do a thing this year. So two teams perplexing that had postseason aspirations looked at this year's trade deadline very differently. Rangers making a big move, and the Mariners just, well, unloading a little bit and keeping a lot of guys that they're not very happy with.
Well, I have to believe Seattle's just giving itself a mulligan on 2015 and saying, all right, we'll come back with much the same cast in 2016 and bank on some progression. But yeah, you have to admire the long-term vision of Texas and getting in there and taking advantage of a situation where, you know, there was a lot of suitors for Hamels, and you're right, the Rangers weren't a team that came to mind because of the position they're in this year, two games under 500. But that's what the trade deadline has become. It's different things to different teams. For a lot of teams, it's, you know, trying to add that piece that's going to help them this year. For bottom feeders, it's trying to add that piece that's going to help them 3 years from now. And for Texas, it's trying to do something to your team that is going to help you right now and theoretically could help you go on a run. But really, in the not too distant future, you've acquired a guy who, when, as you said, pair him with Yu Darvish, and you know, that's a great starting point.
You know, it's nice to have confidence in your group. Okay, you know, let's make a move. Let's get into the playoffs. We can do it, guys, you know. But it's also good to have, you know, to look at things objectively. And in a case like the Mariners and the Rangers, they're in a tough division with Houston and L.A. realistically, playoffs aren't, you know, it's not looking too strong, a playoff spot. So you take a step back and you think kind of big picture, where if you're not in a position to add a piece or two to put you over the top, you kind of sometimes have to be smart. And I think if, you know, you don't want to blow your entire future on the just the off chance of sneaking into the playoffs one year, and you sacrifice the next few years. So I think it's kind of, you know, it's a, on both sides of the coin, there's things to look at, but that's a tough division when you see Houston's lineup and LA's right there as well. You know, it's nice to just to know if you're a fan of those two teams, you don't have to go all in, and you're not necessarily, you know, sacrificing the next couple years.
Yeah, you can kind of do it both ways in that case. You're right. Ryan Dixon, Mike Johnson with me. I'm Roger Lajoie for Banana Sportsnet Magazine Live as we continue to look around the winners and losers at the Major League Baseball trade deadline. The Los Angeles Dodgers resources are just over the top. There's no question. The ownership has always been all in. Some people thought they'd get David Price. We'll see, though, if they can get Price as a free agent in the offseason and cost them nothing. They kept their top two prospects and added a couple of pretty good pitchers to their rotation to a team that's already in first place in the division. I think it's kind of clear, Mike, that the Dodgers have got to be included among the winning teams of the deadline.
I think so. I mean, they're not a worse team today than they were the other day. They're another team leading their division. You know, they didn't make any panic moves or anything like that. They're situated well. And like you said, in the offseason, they're positioned. They're a team that can just throw the checkbook at a guy like David Price as well.
Yeah, the 1-2 of Kershaw, Greinke, is overwhelming. I mean, I know Kershaw's had his troubles in the postseason, but my goodness, I feel like that's a situation that's begging for correction at some point. The guy is still the top arm on the planet. And to be able to throw Greinke out there, number two, the way he's been pitching. And yeah, obviously they got Latos to come in, be behind those two guys. That's a pretty mean team. They're in a dogfight with the Giants, who we all know what that team can do. But yeah, I mean, the Dodgers are not a team that sits on its hands. They went out there and made some magic happen with all those names and all those arms coming in. And, you know, they're clearly gunning for it. It's been a long time by any standard, I guess, now since that team's won a title. So they want it pretty bad.
Now, there are teams that, you know, you can sort of figure out what they're doing, and teams that are buyers, sellers. And then there's the San Diego Padres, who to me were inexplicable. Now, I do know, and conjecture is out there, they did try to move some of their free agents to be. I mean, Upton, Kennedy, they got all kinds of guys. They have all kinds of good young assets as well. They were close to Kimbrel to the Yankees and insisted on a prospect instead. James Shields was out there as well. I suppose there's still a chance. They got a weak schedule. They can get into the playoffs, second wild card and all of that. But honestly, if there's a team that should have been selling and did something or found a way to get something for those assets, should it not been the San Diego Padres? I was hearing guys on the MLB network just ripping them a new you-know-what about, like, what were they thinking? I don't know. Maybe they just waited too long to make a move, but they think they're going to make the playoffs, 49-53 in the National League?
I don't know. It certainly doesn't look good for them. And, yeah, if they're, you know, Upton and Kennedy, if they end up just bolting in the offseason, it's going to look pretty bad not getting anything for them when, you know, in theory they could have got a decent return for them, you know, ship them off to a contending team. You know, they'll be willing, like we saw with a few deals made, teams are willing to give up a bit of their future to get a good piece now. So, you know, San Diego had a chance to improve their long-term, you know, organizational health, and if those guys bolt in the offseason without getting anything for them, it's going to, you know, it could come back and really bite them, because it doesn't look great. Certainly doesn't look great.
Yeah, I mean, San Diego was raising eyebrows in the offseason with the moves they made there. You know, I think there was a sense they could be a fairly strong team. But, yeah, I mean, they probably more than any other team, that was the name we kept hearing as the deadline approached. You know, what's going to happen in San Diego? What's going to happen in San Diego? And, yeah, it never materialized. So, yeah, this is definitely, I mean, who knows? Shields is someone who could still potentially go before we just passed the non-waiver deadline. He's someone who could clear.
Yeah, could
maybe they'll still
August.
Do something. But yeah. But yeah, right now, a lot of question marks there.
New York Mets are maybe the last team to talk about in terms of another team that's pretty interesting. The Washington Nationals look to be at the start of the season the prohibitive favorites in that division, but with what is really a brilliant young pitching staff and a Mets team that looks to be pretty good. The ownership there, though, has gotten a little cheap, and people didn't know what they were doing. Now, the Carlos Gomez fiasco was a fiasco. It's a disaster. It's one of those things, maybe it's more a reflection of social media and word getting out beforehand and what have you. But the Mets do go out and get Cespedes, pick up Fulmer. They get, you look at this team, they did improve themselves, and they are in a much better position to maybe even win a division or get a wild card than the Padres are. Long term, you have to wonder if how committed the ownership's going to be. But short term, I would say the Mets have got to be a better team. They did it in a weird way, but they got to be better than they were before the trade deadline.
It's true. My favorite thing about the Mets in the last couple of days, it simply comes down to a Jerry Seinfeld tweet. Their move to get Cespedes, a Cespedes for the rest of us.
It was a classic.
All the baseball stuff aside, that tweet came from it. So, I'm a big fan of it. But yeah, the whole Gomez stuff was weird, but they're in a better position today, than they were the other day. And they seem like a team that is built to make a run. So if you're a Mets fan, I think you're definitely happy. If you're on one side of New York, you're really happy. And if you're a Yankees fan, you may be a little nervous.
You look at the Nats, too, staying in that division. A good example of you do what you got to do. I mean, Drew Storen, clearly not real happy about having his role readjusted with the arrival of Jonathan Papelbon. But, Washington's quickly falling into that category of teams that, we've seen in across all sports over different times that at the beginning of the season sure seemed like they have all the components but haven't been able to put it all together. And they went out there and got a playoff-tested guy, a guy who obviously has, still brings a lot to the closer role and certainly brings some bravado and maybe a little, something of what they've been missing in the playoffs if you're into intangibles and that kind of thing. But, yeah, they, the Nats basically showed Storen and everyone else that, hey, we think you guys are a good team, but we're going to do whatever we have to do. And everyone's going to have to eat it a little bit here. If bringing in this guy, is going to help us. And they went out and did that, and we'll see if they can finally get over the hump a little bit in October.
And it will be a fascinating run to October as well. Lots of activity at the trade deadline. The Blue Jays certainly leading the way with their moves, but boy, lots of activity. So much fun in baseball. And we'll see if anyone can get anything done in August. A lot tougher having to put it on the waiver wire, but you never do know. I'm Roger Lajoie in for Ben Ennis, Ryan Dixon, Mike Johnson here at Sportsnet Magazine Live on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Coming up, if you've got tickets to the New England Patriots, they're usually in high demand. Not so much for the first four games of the regular season, though, for obvious reasons. But is there a chance that could change because of a court decision? We'll talk about that topic and more next. You're listening to Sportsnet Magazine live on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Sportsnet Magazine live. I'm Roger Lajoie in for Ben Ennis, Ryan Dixon, Mike Johnson with me. Blue Jay baseball coming up with the pregame show with Mike Woolner at 12:30. First pitch, 107. Arden Zwelling will join me after the noon hour, and we'll tee up the ball game for you as well as the Blue Jays and the Kansas City Royals. City is just electric with excitement about the Blue Jays. We've been talking a lot of baseball, boys. Let's hit a couple of other topics here that people are talking about this week for sure. Tom Brady, four-game suspension, appeal, courts, blah, 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 blah. This entire story borders on the ridiculous. But what are your thoughts on what the NFL is doing here? And I don't know. None of us is a lawyer, but I don't know what will happen now.
I mean, from a legal perspective, I don't know. And I kind of don't care because it's part of me thinks I don't like seeing, the fact Brady's going to lose, I believe it's $2 million of his, salary because of this. To me, that's the only thing legally that I think they should fix. I mean, it's got to be one of the dumbest sports stories in recent years, possibly of all time. I mean, this is like, remember Manti Te'o a couple years ago with his invisible fake girlfriend or whatever that was?
Yeah.
This is...
This makes you yearn for those days of
invisible
girlfriends.
Those were the good old days when it was just that stuff.
I hadn't
stuff.
Thought about that in a while. I remember that.
But I mean, like, it's, you know, this is, it's just kind of one of those ridiculous stories that it's become such a huge thing. I don't know, like, everyone knows about it. Like, the game, whether or not the football's impacted the game or not, oh, it's so far in the past. Who cares? They won a Super Bowl. Who cares about it? Tom Brady is going to miss 4 games. That's probably unfair for the Patriots. The NFLPA sent out a statement on the issue earlier this week, and it points to NFL had no right to do this. They're making it up as they go along. The whole thing about it is just super, super frustrating. And part of me thinks it's a little bit of a PR stunt from the NFL's perspective, is let's put so much of the spotlight on this Deflategate. Let's come out with new rulings and we'll release big statements, and let's take away from the some of the other issues, you know, the negative attention that the league got last year with all the off-field stuff and concussions and that ongoing storyline. To me, part of this is like a PR move. Let's focus on this dumb story so everything else kind of we can just brush it aside.
Well, yeah. If that's deliberate PR strategy, they're even dumber than I thought. This is disastrous for the NFL, I think.
Yeah, I mean, number one, if Brady gets 4 games and some guys are missing only, you know, 1 or 2 for, you know, some of the domestic violence incidents we've seen, I mean, there is a disconnect there somewhere. To be honest with you, I feel like any cheating that isn't drug-related cheating, people kind of don't care about. That's just sort of the way I feel. I mean... whether it's sign stealing or, you know, every sport has its little things. And I think to some degree, I mean, granted, I've thrown a football, but never at a high level. I mean, however, whatever kind of difference taking a little air out of the ball makes, I think most of us are kind of willing to chalk it up to home field advantage a little bit. And, you know, so maybe the Zamboni guy lets out a little extra water at the opponent's end in the NHL. And, you know, maybe they, you know, whatever. There's all these little ways to monkey with things. And it's stuff like this I just feel like has been going on forever. So if you do want to nail someone on it, okay. But 4 games, I think, from the beginning has been pretty shocking.
Yeah. And I'm shocked, to be honest with you, that they didn't at least cut some kind of a deal or do it. And they're sticking to their guns. It's like it's a personal vendetta now being played out. Like, come on, the easy thing is, all right, give him a hefty fine and no suspension, or 1 or 2 games. And I don't know, none of us are privy to the talks, but surely you could have, like, made, now it's going to court, now it drags out for a month. And let me ask you, if this is Peyton Manning or Aaron Rodgers, does he get 4 games?
I don't think so. And I think it's not so much Tom Brady, but the fact that it's the Patriots and they've been caught, you know, filming teams, and they're let's do anything to win type franchise. They've been certainly successful at it, and I think that plays a big role into it as well, the fact that it's the Patriots and not another team.
That's a great point. I think Robert Kraft, as he has said in his comments, very disappointed the way he played itself out. Just took the punishment for the Patriots and felt that, they'll let Brady off, and surprise, surprise, they didn't. Sportsnet Magazine Live, Ryan Dixon, Mike Johnson, I'm Roger Lajoie. Top of the hour, Arden Zwelling joins us to talk some Blue Jays, as everybody in town talking the Blue Jays. And of course, we have the game coming up pregame at 12:30 with Mike Woolner. Rowdy Roddy Piper is such a wonderful name. You smile even saying it, because if you were a fan at all, and who wasn't at least a little bit or familiar with wrestling back in the day, he passed away yesterday. And tonight, UFC 190 goes. And Rhonda, back in Rio again, Mike, as you well know, where it started for her and what a story she is, and dedicating the fight tonight to another Rowdy.
Yeah, you know, years ago, you know, Rhonda Rousey, the biggest star in the UFC at the moment in terms of, like, being a global superstar, she grew up a professional wrestling fan. She loves it. Earlier this year, she made an appearance at WrestleMania in California in front of, like, 70 or 80,000 people. And that was a lifelong dream of hers. And years ago, she asked permission from Roddy Piper to use his nickname as, you know, an homage to him and what a big fan of his that Rousey is. And tonight, you know, it's so fitting in a sad and poetic way that, you know, Piper's death yesterday and Ronda Rousey fighting tonight with the Rowdy nickname. And also Jeff Roman, a friend of all of us, he pointed out on Twitter last night that one of Ronda Rousey's mentors is Judo Jean LaBelle, who was a mentor and someone Roddy Piper looked up to as well. So there's a bunch of different connections to this fight tonight between Ronda Rousey and Roddy Piper. And you know, talking about the fight itself, Ronda Rousey, this is as sure a thing as there is in combat sports. Her opponent tonight is not on the same level. It's something like a 1700 to 1 favorite Rousey is. It's insane, like the biggest odds in UFC history. And there's been talk between her opponent and Rousey, you know, her opponent in the lead up to the fight saying, "Oh, when I beat you, I hope you don't kill yourself." And it's a very well-known fact that Ronda Rousey's father committed suicide when she was a kid.
Wow.
So yeah,
that
no, and
is pretty
now,
bad.
Her opponent said that she didn't intend it to that. She was just saying it as a saying, and you'd like to take her for her word on that, but Ronda Rousey certainly isn't. So, and she stated that she wants to really punish this girl. So at some point tonight, you know, in the middle of the night, Ronda Rousey is going to be a worldwide trending topic for a number of reasons. The Roddy Piper stuff, the way that, you know, I'm going on record, she's going to really dismantle her opponent tonight. But it's just weird and fitting and poetic and tragic that all of this is happening at the same time.
She's too dominant, do you think, Ryan, in terms of like nobody can compete with her?
I don't know. I mean, it doesn't seem to be doing anything to diminish her star. I mean, she has such a high profile. I mean, she's truly one of those personalities that it doesn't matter if you're like me and you don't know much about the sport, you still know who she is. She's still someone who pops up in the public consciousness when she's having a fight. So, yeah, I mean, as Mike said, she essentially, I think at this point, she's the biggest star they've got going.
Yep.
She's the biggest female athlete right now with Serena Williams.
Yeah, well, she just beat Serena out for the ESPY for best female athlete. And mixed martial arts, you know, in the United States on the mainstream sports networks hasn't always got the type of coverage, but Ronda Rousey certainly does. You know, this week she's had features in Time, you know, New York Times, all the major outlets are covering her because she's this dynamic fighter. And it's to the point now where the UFC's marketing her the way, you know, Mike Tyson in the late 80s, early 90s, when, you know, it didn't matter that you knew that Mike Tyson was going to knock his opponent out in a round or two. You just wanted to tune in to see how devastating a win.
It's a spectacle.
It's a spectacle, yeah. And, you know, part of that speaks to Rousey's division not being a strong division. Not a lot of people talk about that. It's not a strong division. There aren't many world-class females at 135 pounds in MMA, but Rousey, regardless of that, is a superstar, and she's to this point where she's bigger than the division. She's actually bigger than the UFC in some respects.
Well, and she is bigger than the UFC in a lot of respects, and right now she's the headliner of the UFC, which I think also, Mike, really, you know, shows her worldwide brand appeal, because we're talking about UFC 190. You read all the stories on it, and she is the main event, the lead story. In fact, almost the only thing that people are talking about, which is still a pretty good card tonight in Rio besides that.
Yeah, there are some good fights. You know, it's in Brazil, so there's a lot of Brazilians, so people in Canada and the States might not be as familiar. But there's a lot of good fights on this card. But, you know, Ronda Rousey, she's the only athlete in the UFC, really in UFC history, that can go on The Tonight Show or Good Morning America. Like, this truly mainstream coverage, the UFC couldn't put any, when George St. Pierre was around, he was a mainstream star in Canada, but you couldn't put him on The Tonight Show. Brock Lesnar really is the only other one with that crossover mainstream appeal. So Ronda Rousey, the UFC's done a lot for her, but she's certainly doing a lot for the UFC in return.
Has been an incredible story in UFC 190 goes tonight. Ryan Dixon, Mike Johnson from Sportsnet Magazine. On Sportsnet Magazine Live, I'm Roger Lajoie for Ben Ennis. We've got a couple of minutes to talk about. Earlier, we were talking about workplace environments and the Jays clubhouse and how happy they all are and everybody feeling pretty good about themselves, and which is all fine and dandy. Jonathan Bernier and the Toronto Maple Leafs going to the salary arbitration, Ryan, has got to be, I use the word awkward. It's beyond awkward. This is, in my mind, pretty difficult because, first of all, anytime arbitration, when management has to argue against an employee, is bad. But when the gap is as big as this and no sign, at least now, they're going to even come to a last-minute argument, boy, is there going to be one unhappy camper leaving that meeting.
Yeah, it's one of those fly-on-the-wall situations where you wish you could just get in there and hear exactly what's being said. Big gulf, as you said, between the ask and the offer. I think Jonathan Bernier is an absolutely fascinating guy on the Toronto Maple Leafs because as they map out this future, you can see a scenario where he's a big part of it, and you can also see a scenario where the last thing they want is Jonathan Bernier on their team because I think there's a very good chance that Bernier is still a high-end NHL goalie. The Leafs presumably are a team that is looking at drafting high next year, maybe finishing 28th, 29th, maybe finishing 30th. Do you want to put a guy in the crease who, if he has a great season, if he does live up to the potential, I think, you know, he's shown... You know, maybe he goes out there and throws up a 930 save percentage and on his own gets the Leafs 10 points, 5 wins. And now you're drafting 7th overall instead of 2nd overall. That could mean, a huge difference in talent in terms of the next phase of your rebuild. So, you know, do you want a guy who is, he'll be 27 here in just a few days, in a week. Maybe you want to commit to him and say, this is our guy. We think we're going to turn the corner quick. You know what? We're not focused on drafting first, second, third overall. We're more focused on hitting it in the later rounds where we've been getting absolutely nothing. We don't think we have to do, you know, the Pittsburgh draft first overall 3 years in a row. Okay, then maybe this is your guy and you lock him up and you check that off your list of things to do. Or, as I said, if you know that you're in for some pain, which I think Mike Babcock referenced when he came here, Lou Lamoriello referenced when he came here, everyone sort of feels like, maybe you say, look, we got a long time to find a goalie. There, you know, some people will tell you it's an overvalued position. You should be able to go out and get a decent league average starter almost every year or whatever without giving up too much. Then, you know, maybe you look at trading Bernier to a team that, you know, feels like if only it had a goalie, it really would have something cooking. So, you know, there's guys like Morgan Riley who you go, clearly this is a guy who's part of the long-term future. There's guys like Joffrey Lupul who you look at and go, well, they're going to do whatever they can to get rid of him. But Bernier's a swing guy for me where I'm just not sure. I could see a scenario, A, where he's with the Leafs for the next 7 years, or B, where he's not here much longer.
It comes down to how good you think Jonathan Bernier is in terms of being a goaltender on an elite team, whether that team is an elite team in 1 year, 2 years, or 10 years. Right?
Yeah, you know, heading into arbitration, I sort of thought Bernier and Braden Holtby's situation in Washington were sort of similar. Now, Holtby had a much better season, and his ceiling might be a little bit higher than Bernier's, but they were both asking for a lot, and the gaps between what the player and what the team were asking was a wide margin. I don't see, you know, and Holtby ended up getting a 5-year, $30 million deal in Washington. That's certainly not going to happen in Toronto based on the other moves they've made this offseason, these short-term 1 to 2 year deals where the guys become a UFA at the end of it. It gives the Leafs flexibility that if by the trade deadline things aren't working out with a player, they sell them off for a draft pick or a prospect. This, you know, the simple solution here is you give Bernier a 1-year deal, maybe a 2-year deal, like a bridge deal, like Galchenyuk in Montreal. But I think at this point, based on Bernier's asking price, he wants, you know, around $5 million. You don't give him necessarily a long-term contract. I think you give him a 1-year deal. You pay him around anywhere between 3.5 and 4 or somewhere like that. And you see what he does this year, and you use this year as a true tryout, because that's what it's going to be for most of the other Leafs on the team. So why is Bernier any different?
Huge gap, 5.1 to 2.89. We've never seen one like it. Ryan Dixon, Mike Johnson, Sportsnet Magazine Live this week. I'm Roger Lajoie for Ben Ennis. Gentlemen, a pleasure to be with you. Thanks so much. We'll do it again soon.
Sounds good.
Excellent.
Ryan Dixon, Mike Johnson, I'm Roger Lajoie. All right, enough of this chatter about all this other stuff. Back to the Blue Jays. Arden Zwelling is coming up at the top of the hour with me. Thanks to Alex Machinsky and Mark Boffo for putting the show together. More Blue Jay talk is coming up next on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.